Just a quick addendum to yesterday's episode before I get into the main part of today's episode. The HBO show that I was referencing yesterday is not called The Icon. It's called The Idol. And I'm even taking a second now to make sure I have that right. I don't know why I was calling it by the wrong name. I kind of forgot about it for a while because I thought it was never going to see the light of day. Even though I was like all into it for a second, then like I said, I kind of forgot about it, and now I'm back into it because it's premiering in like 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks, something like that. So it's called The Idol. It's not called The Icon. And it seems like The Idol is actually a much better title for it than The Icon would have been anyway. So it's premiering on HBO on June 4th. And speaking of HBO, apparently Eli Roth's shark documentary, Finn, is now available to stream on the HBO Max app. I guess not on the actual streaming service, unfortunately, but on the app. So if you have a HBO Max and you upgraded to the app, you can watch Finn by Eli Roth. I don't have an HBO... Oh, wait, I do have an HBO Max account, but I'm not subscribed right now. Maybe I'll subscribe for a month just so I can watch it. The thing is, I think it's a little... Isn't it like $15 for a month? Maybe it's less. Maybe it's like $13. I don't know. Maybe I'll do it for Finn. The thing is, I can get it for free because I'm on somebody else's account. Shh, don't tell HBO. So, I'm not sure if it's even worth it for me to sign up, but it might be worth it for me to watch Finn. Or finish watching Finn, I should say. I started it on Discovery Plus, as you know if you've been listening to the podcast. So today's episode is about Big Wednesday, which is co-written and directed by John Milius. It stars Gary Busey, Jan Michael Vincent, and William Catt. This is a great movie. This is a great film. It's an awesome movie. It's the greatest movie ever made about surfing and about surfers specifically. It's more about the surfers themselves than the actual surfing. It's more about their milieu, their love life. They exist in this kind of SoCal surfing community world. And it's just interesting to see the way things play out. Great script, co-written by John Milius. Great acting from the leads, particularly Gary Busey, who was an amazing actor back then. And also from Jan Michael Vincent. I think he's not a great actor and he doesn't give a great performance, but there's something about Jan Michael Vincent. He has this strange charisma where I'm a straight man, but I remember in one scene in particular, he's just kind of sitting at the table with his boys, William Catt on one side, Gary Busey on the other. They're talking to a girl or something, and he's got his shirt off and he's just kind of sitting there, and I couldn't take my eyes off him. I'm a straight man. But he just has this strange charisma. And he never really became a movie star. He never really had the career that maybe he should have. He strikes me as a movie star because he's not, as I said, he's not a great actor. This guy's not a character actor, but he's got leading man looks and he can act well enough to be a leading man or even a movie star, but it just, I don't know too much about the whole Jan Michael Vincent thing, but I apparently it just never quite happened for him there. Or it just never quite happened for him. Maybe he flirted with movie stardom. I mean, even in this, he was kind of like, he's kind of the star, along with his two co-leads. But, yeah, I don't know. I guess it just never blew up the way it could have. So that is, he also, I don't know, he's just got like this kind of weird, distinct look to him. He's sort of got a blonde surfer look, but underneath that, there is almost like this white trash thing. And I know Bret Easton Ellis talks about him as like his first major crush or something. And I think that's part of it because Bret Easton Ellis has a thing for like kind of like the white trash look. Apparently Bret Easton Ellis loves his ass too or something. As I said, I'm a straight man, so I don't care about any of this, but he does have a certain look and charisma that is intriguing. So that's Big Wednesday. I love the way the kind of like quote-unquote action scenes are done. There's this bar brawl that happens and it's just like insane. And then there's a fight during a party, a house party, in the next scene. And it's like it's shot, the way these are shot are like big action scenes, even though it's just like some surfers fighting with some other kids in SoCal in the late 70s. This definitely has a new Hollywood feel and vibe to it. And I love the crash zooms. I love the way the fights are shot. This is the most epic movie about surfing ever. I would say Point Break is probably number two. But while Point Break feels a little phony and a little goofy, just maybe a little like false or forced or something, maybe just a little too 80s, there's just something more kind of real and natural and soulful about Big Wednesday. And even though it does feel big and it feels like a movie and it feels epic, thanks to Milius, and all of these things in the best way, it remains grounded. It almost, I don't know, it's almost like a mythology to it. There's almost like a mythology to all of Milius's movies. He almost creates that, similar to the way Tarantino does it. And I know Tarantino has talked about Milius as one of his favorite screenwriters, if not his favorite. And Quentin Tarantino loves Big Wednesday, or he did at one point. That's how I first heard about it. And then they recently talked about it on the podcast on Video Archives, but I forget what the context was. So anyway, yeah, it's like this perfect combination of like realism and groundedness, but then there's something bigger, something mythical happening. But it's never overblown. It's always like tasteful and cool, but shot in a kind of grand manner. I don't know if I'm describing it very well, but needless to say, I enjoyed the movie. I thought it was great. It's sort of about their various, like, you know, relationships and hookups and what have you, but it's like, you know, the actors are so great, the script is so great, Milius's direction is so great, it all just adds up to this kind of, like, this bigger thing, and this is really more than worth seeing. This is like a, kind of like a hidden gem. If you're into surfing, check it out. If you're into New Hollywood, check it out. If you're into Jan Michael Vincent, check it out. It's just like this great movie that nobody seems to talk about, except for Tarantino. So that's Big Wednesday, John Milius. I should mention William Catt as well. I remember when the movie started, I saw him kind of walking down the stairs with the guys, and I just thought, holy shit, that's William Catt. That's the guy from Carrie. He's the third lead. And then I was like, holy shit, he's still alive. He made it out of Carrie. He survived. He's one of those actors who I just identify so much with Carrie, so much with one specific movie. Like, as soon as I see his face, I just see Carrie White at the prom, and I see blood and fire and destruction. I love Carrie. I think it's one of the greatest movies ever made. And he just, like, I just identify him so much with that movie, pretty much to the point that I can't get past it. So even though the guy's a decent actor and he's got the right look, and I like him in this movie, he's good in this movie, I would say of the three, he stands out the least and maybe gives the most kind of flat, bland performance. Jan Michael Vincent can't really act, but at least he's trying. William Catt doesn't even seem to be trying. But I do like him in this movie. As I said, he's got the right look. And I like him as a screen presence, not just because he reminds me of Carrie, which is also kind of a bad thing. I think it can actually hurt an actor's career to be too identified with one project. And I think that's happened to a lot of actors. And I think that probably happened to William Catt, especially when that project is so kind of is as visceral as Carrie is, and he dies in it, and his death is so kind of big and fantastic. It's hard to kind of, like, at least for me, I see a movie like that, it's kind of hard to move on from it. It's hard to see him in any other role because it's like, no, he's Tommy. He's Tommy from Carrie. He died at the end. He's not an actor. He's a character. He's that person. So then I see him in this, and I almost, like, part of me almost rejects it. I can't get past the fact that it's Tommy from Carrie, but yet here he is, alive. His hair is shorter. He looks a little different. This is only 2 years later. This must have been his next movie. This must have been the next movie William Cat did. So that's Carrie, and this is Big Wednesday. You're listening to Video Nasties. My name is Maxwell Haddad. Thank you for listening. See you in hell. Peace. I don't know what happened yesterday. Oh, well, I told you, yeah. I just hadn't really thought about the idol for a while. Peace. More on the death of Rick Dalton. I mentioned that he died in Hawaii a few days ago. I also wanted to mention that he is survived by his wife, Francesca, who I believe was there at his home with him at the time of his death. She was played in the film Once Upon a Time in Hollywood by one of my big crushes, Lorenza Itzo, who I know from Knock Knock and The Great Inferno as well. That's Lorenza Itzo. I just pronounced it like with a kind of faux Italian accent, but she's actually... No, she's not Chilean. Is she Chilean? Pretty sure she's South American. She could be Portuguese. But I'm pretty sure she's South American and she's not Brazilian. I usually remember Brazil because Brazilian girls are the hottest. See you in hell. Peace. As I first started listening to the new episode of the Video Archives podcast yesterday, which, by the way, is titled Day of the Dalton Part 1, The Marshal of Madrid and The Marshal of Madrid / Manhunter, it took me all day to figure out Day of the Dalton as a reference to Day of the Dolphin, or a play on the title. And The Marshal of Madrid and Manhunter are two things that Rick Dalton was featured in. Manhunter is the show... It's like his Mannix episode or something, maybe. Could be a movie, but I think that's what it is. And then The Marshal of Madrid is maybe a movie. I'm not sure. I'm listening to the podcast again now, but I was just reminded, or I just remembered that yesterday after I got out of work, I put on the episode, started it up fresh, and I wasn't sure. I didn't know that the whole episode was going to be about the death of Rick Dalton. I kind of forgot that that was going to be the episode until it started, and then I was like, oh shit, okay, that's what this is. I still thought they were going to switch over to Manhunter by Michael Mann, but alas, that was not the case. So I love the new episode. I think it's amazing and actually really interesting, and I talked about it last night, and it is now part of the Once Upon a Time in Hollywood canon. So, I was thinking, as I was first listening to it yesterday, is this improv? Is this written? Was this outlined? How did they do this? They're all on the same page. They're all talking about these things as if they're real. And a lot of these things are real. But even a lot of the things that are real that they're talking about, Rick Dalton has been inserted into them. And the three of them, when I say them, I mean Gala Avery, Roger Avery, Quentin Tarantino, they sort of seamlessly are able to talk about these things. Quentin Tarantino, I can understand more because he created it and he built this history for Rick Dalton. But then how did he get Roger and Gala on the same page? They must have planned this out. I'm sure some of it is improvised, but I think a lot of it was planned to one level or another, whether that's outlining, whether they had an actual script written that they were working from. I don't think it went that far. But I think they knew what they were going to talk about, and they had it planned out, and they made sure that they were all on the same page. so that they were talking about the same things, and so that it was consistent, that the fake history was consistent enough to appear real. This is Video Nasties. My name is Maxwell Hedda. Thank you for listening. See you in hell. I recently watched Massacre Time, which is a spaghetti western directed by Lucio Fulci. I had previously at least started it. I don't know if I ever finished it. But I did, if I'm not mistaken, I not only talked about it previously on the podcast, but there's actually an episode called Massacre Time. I may have to double check that. What Massacre Time is not just Lucio Fulci attempting to make a western of some sort. No, this is a true, proper spaghetti western. And maybe his first, I'm not sure. I know he made Four of the Apocalypse, I think it's called, which I love even more than Massacre Time. It's bloodier. Massacre Time is earlier. I think Four of the Apocalypse is 1975, maybe 74. I watched it on the Western Channel a long time ago, a year, maybe even 2 years ago. And then Massacre Time is 1968, I believe, starring, I believe it's Franco Nero himself, Django himself, Franco Nero. If I'm not mistaken, he's just got a great face, great look, perfect spaghetti western leading man. I love the way this movie is shot. Some of the frames are very beautiful, shot through windows. I love the location work, and I love that it looks like a Fulci movie, even though it's very different from what has the movies that have come to be most identified with Lucio Fulci, like The Beyond, for example, which I love, and which was years later, many years later. So, Massacre Time, yeah, in terms of plot, it's sort of got a classic, not just spaghetti western, but sort of a classic western plot, although with some spaghetti western distinctions. So it's kind of the stranger rides into town, the town is being run by a fascist, an evil, rich dictator type, who invariably has this retarded, inbred son who is also a sadist. These seem to be tropes of spaghetti westerns, and that's the case in this movie. That's exactly what happens. When we first see this horrible family, they kill the son from this family that's trying to leave the town. Apparently you can't leave the town once you're there. And Franco Nero's riding around town, and he's seeing that all the buildings are stamped with these initials, which are the initials of this sort of baron, evil baron type who basically owns the town and controls everything. And is essentially a fascist dictator. There's something that I find intriguing about Jan Michael Vincent that I don't think I mentioned previously on the pod. On this episode, I mean, specifically. If I did mention it, I apologize. I'm high right now as I'm recording this, and I might just not be remembering that I recorded it, but I remembered that I wanted to mention it. So, what I find, well, one of a few things that I find intriguing about Jan Michael Vincent is his chin. As someone, myself personally, who has a weak chin, somewhat weak chin. I like my chin, but it's a little weak, and his is a little weak as well. And I just wanted to bring that up because it gives hope to us weak-chinned men that you can still get lots of women. You can still be a sex symbol. Even with a quote-unquote, I would say more like a smaller chin. A chin on the smaller side. Chicks still dig it. There is a movie, a fictional movie, that is discussed on the new episode of the Video Archives podcast that just dropped yesterday. I'm currently recording this on May 24th. 2023, it's Wednesday, it's almost 11 a.m., and I'm on Cape Cod. The movie is called The Fireman, and I may as well just read you, I'm so obsessed with this episode, I may as well just read you the description so that you have some context. And hopefully that will help you understand what the fuck I'm talking about. All right, here's the description from Stitcher. This is Day of the Dalton, Part 1, the Marshal of Madrid / Manhunter, the Video Archives podcast with Quentin Tarantino and Roger Avery, May 23rd, 2023, 93 minutes. On May 19th, 2023, actor Rick Dalton passed away peacefully in his home in Honolulu, Hawaii. He is survived by his wife, Francesca. Dalton was beloved by fans of Bounty Law, where he played bounty hunter Jake Cahill for 5 seasons, and also for his iconic role as a flamethrower-wielding vigilante in the Fireman series. But he was so much more than that, with a career that spanned over 20 years. On this episode of the Video Archives podcast, we invite you to remember Rick Dalton. In part one of our memorial episode, we discuss his most famous roles, including standout TV performances in Cades County and Manhunter. We'll also hear excerpts of a Q&A conducted by Quentin in 1999 between him and Rick. Stay tuned for more of our celebration of Dalton's life and work, coming in 2 weeks. Okay, so... out of everything in Rick Dalton's filmography, out of everything in his canon, this is the thing that I would most like to see made into a real movie, actually made. Now, this movie is mentioned in the novel, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. If I'm remembering correctly, the first one is written by Cliff and directed by Rick and starring Rick, I think. And then the second one, they're just talking about it now in my now third re-listen of the episode. And I'm still not quite clear as to who actually directed the episode. They're in talks now with directors. So I would love to see Tarantino make The Fireman as his 10th movie, 10th and final movie. I don't want it to be his final, but it probably will be. It probably won't be The Fireman. It'll probably be this movie, The Movie Critic, which it sounds like it's sort of about Pauline Kael. But even if Tarantino's not directing, I would love to see The Fireman made. And I would love for Tarantino to write it, but I doubt that'll ever happen either. I would love to write and direct it, just throwing it out there, but that's a ridiculous notion. I just had to say it. I just had to get it out there on the pod, put it out into the universe. For this one, I would love to see Eli Roth. Actually, I think he would be perfect to write and direct. Or if Tarantino wrote it and Eli Roth directed it, that would be legendary. This sounds like it would be a cool movie. It would be up my alley. I guess it's kind of like The Executioner, I think. Which is a video box that I used to see browsing video stores in my youth. Now, Tarantino mentions on the podcast that the first Fireman captured the gritty feel of Times Square and New York in the 1970s. And he said the second one didn't really capture that, or couldn't really capture that, and that was kind of what made the first one special and magical, even. So that intrigues me, and that's it just sounds really cool, with like a gritty 1970s New York, kind of like revenge action movie, written by Cliff Booth and directed by Rick Dalton. Sounds perfect to me. Can't go wrong with that. My name is Maxwell Haddad, and this is Video Nasties. Peace. I forgot to mention something. The reason I decided to watch Massacre Time last night, the reason that I decided to go with it is that my sister is actually in Italy right now, and she went to Cinecittà, which is the biggest studio in Italy. It's in Rome. She's in Rome right now. And it's where Fellini shot. And if I'm not mistaken, not only did Fulci shoot there, he shot part of Cat in the Brain at the studio, like, outside the sound stages, like, in the parking lot, basically. There's a scene where he's walking to his car, and he's at Cinecittà, if I'm not mistaken. And also, if I'm not mistaken, Wes Anderson shot there for The Life Aquatic with Steve Zissou. Needless to say, I'm very excited about this whole Cinecittà thing. Or maybe it's more accurate to say that I'm jealous and that I wish I was there at Cinecittà in Rome, Italy. So, yeah, I don't know. I just wanted to watch a Fulci movie. That was the first one that came up on Arrow when I punched in his name, and I thought, yeah. Lucio Fulci Spaghetti Western could really do me right now. I watched the shit out of it. I thought I would watch it from start to finish and really have, like, more of a concrete, definitive review for you today, which obviously I don't. And I did not stay awake for the entirety of it, but I definitely did watch it before, and I did remember it, at least parts of it. I remember the scene where they shot the son of the family that was trying to leave the town, and I remembered the evil, the sadistic son. And yeah, I still don't know if I've watched the entire thing from start to finish, which I wanted to do last night, but that didn't happen. I'm starting to feel like I'm going crazy a little bit. I may have talked about this already. I don't remember talking about it, but I could be repeating myself, which makes me sound crazy. I could also just go back and listen to the first part of this episode, but I don't like listening to my own voice, which is why I don't edit the episodes any longer, for better or worse. So I watched this movie streaming on TCM On Demand, which I was using for the first time. My mom showed me. My mom was actually the one who showed me how to use it. If you have Sling, if you're subscribed to Sling, apparently you can go in, you go into the guide, and then you find whatever channels that you have on Sling. Apparently an on-demand option, any, like, the movie channels, apparently. So you just kind of scroll down, you find the channel, click to the left, click on it, boom, you're in. You're watching movies on demand. TCM is on Sling, and it's on demand. It's kind of old school, kind of like having digital cable back in the day where you could, like, where there was, like, they added this on-demand feature at one point. This is many years ago. So that's where I watched Big Wednesday. I was very happy to see it there. I was scrolling down, going through the alphabet. Big Wednesday happened to be the first one that I really, really wanted to watch, needed to watch, a classic. And I'll keep scrolling down. So the next movie you get may begin with the letter C. Again, I apologize if I already covered this, but I just wanted to make sure that I made it clear. There is a definite nihilism to spaghetti westerns, to the spaghetti western genre in general, and I think that Massacre Time has a true nihilism to it and a true black-heartedness to it, particularly in that scene where the inbred son shoots the son of the poorer family, the fleeing family. Also, I want to mention real quick, I just picked up some of the dankest shit I've ever smoked. It's called Butter Stuff or something. Very high testing, low price. Perfect.
This has been a production of Reptilian.